This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Few wild animals live as close to us as white-tailed deer. Graceful and majestic, they're prized by hunters and hated by backyard gardeners. Deer are everywhere and misunderstood.
I did have those early memories of deer and just kind of an awareness that they're always around. They're always kind of at the edges.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Governor Jim Justice will call a special session of the state legislature to address budget priorities missed in the regular session. Chris Schultz has the story.
The governor had already discussed calling a special session in May before the final gavel of the regular session Saturday night. But during a regular briefing Thursday, a visibly frustrated justice said he is likely to call legislators back to the Capitol before the May 14 primary election. He said the proposed budget was rushed, omitting key tax breaks for families and creating a, quote, big-time problem for the newly formed Department of Human Services.
We spent a lot of time talking about issues that were more social issues and forgot to budget, and absolutely at the last minute, we tried to run in and switch this and that and everything else, and we made a bunch of mistakes.
Justice explained that waiting until after the mid-May elections would push the budget process too close to the end of the fiscal year. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
Few wild animals live as close to us as white-tailed deer. Graceful and majestic, they're prized by hunters and hated by backyard gardeners. Deer are everywhere and misunderstood. Erica Hauser is the author of The Age of Deer, Trouble and Kinship with Our Wild Neighbors, a book that takes some of the mystery out of these animals that lived on the edge of humanity for a very long time. Bill Lynch spoke with Hauser for Inside Appalachia.
Your background book bio mentions that you're a poet, journalist. Mm-hmm. You've covered culture and environmental issues, and you're also a teacher. So how did you get to a book about deer, especially one that, like this one, which isn't exactly a hunting guide or even a scientific treatment? It's a very broad kind of book.
Right. I hope nobody will look to this book for hunting advice. They will be disappointed. But I came to the topic kind of very slowly and gradually. Didn't come to me in a flash or anything like that. But I did have those early memories of deer and just kind of an awareness that they're always around. They're always kind of at the edges. And I had gotten, as an adult, as I was kind of becoming a writer, I had gotten really interested in questions about nature and humans and what we even mean when we use that word nature. What are we saying when we say that something is natural? And at some point, I realized that deer would be a really good topic for digging into some of those questions.
Were they always this close to us?
I would say probably not, but they are edge creatures. You know, we tend to associate them with wilderness and deep forests and kind of untouched lands. And in fact, their best habitat is on the edges. Native Americans, for example, used to do controlled burns in order to kind of create clearings. And the low, brushy vegetation that grows back from that is great deer food. So they were, you know, they were doing that to attract deer and sort of create habitat for them. In our contemporary world, we have created edges everywhere. You know, kind of paradoxically, that's why deer can thrive so well among us in our cities and our suburbs. They find lots of food where, let's say, a park meets the woods or along roadsides or, you know, obviously in our backyards.
With doing this book, did it change how you looked at how we're adjacent with or parallel to, I guess, to nature?
Yeah, I think a lot of things changed for me during the writing of the book. I mean, one of the big stories that the book tells is about the decline and then the recovery of deer populations through history. That's not a story that most people are aware of, I don't think. You know, a lot of us know about what happened with bison, which is similar, that they were, you know, nearly wiped out and then they recovered somewhat. With deer, it's a really similar story, but we just have largely forgotten it. And part of that story is about the deliberate restocking of deer in many states. This was in the early 20th century. The conservation movement was getting started, and there were various things that were done to try to help deer recover, because they had actually become locally extirpated in many places, and there were entire states that had no deer at all. It's so hard for us to picture that. So commercial hunting was outlawed. That made a big difference for them. But also they were restocked and moved from one place to another, one state to another, to rebuild those populations. And I think when I learned about that history, that just sort of permanently changed the way I see them. They're a native animal, of course. But, you know, at what point do you say, you know, this is a natural or an artificial population when it's been so deeply impacted by humans?
You've been doing readings and appearances. What kind of questions are people asking?
Lots of people want to know more about chronic wasting disease, which is a very serious problem for all the members of the deer family. So that includes elk and moose. Chronic wasting disease is a neurological disease. It's always fatal, and there's no treatment or cure. And it's not caused by a virus or a bacteria. It's caused by a misfolded protein called a prion. And this infects animals when it is ingested or inhaled. So deer can communicate this disease to each other. And the really awful thing about it is that it can stay in the soil for quite a long time, like up to 10 years, and be even taken up by plants, which then if a deer consumes that plant, it can contract the disease. Chronic wasting disease, we've only known it to be around since the late 60s, and it's now spread to more than half of the states in the U.S. It was recently found in Yellowstone National Park. It's not known at this point ever to have passed to a human, but it is closely related to mad cow disease, which we know can and has passed to humans.
The book is The Age of Deer, Trouble and Kinship with Our Wild Neighbors by Erica Hauser. Erica, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can find a longer version of this interview on our website at wvpublic.org. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Rain and thunderstorms today, high temperatures in the 60s. Rain and thunderstorms continue tonight with lows in the 40s and low 50s. Tomorrow, partly sunny with highs in the 60s. Support for WVPB is provided by the law firm of Jenkins Fenstermaker, PLLC, celebrating 100 years of representing businesses and individuals throughout West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio. On this week's premiere broadcast of Mountain Stage, we hear the second part of our 40th anniversary celebration. Our song of the week comes to us from James McMurtry. This episode was recorded on December 10th, 2023 at the Culture Center Theater in Charleston with host Kathy Matea, James McMurtry, Susie Roach, and Lucy Wainwright Roach, John Doyle and Mick McAuley, Tommy Prine, Sherry Wheeler and Kenny White, and a special appearance from West Virginia Poet Laureate Mark Harshman. Our song of the week is Painting by Numbers by James McMurtry, which appears on his album Too Long in the Wasteland.
Of the schoolyard, her padlocked and chained to keep all the children and out of the rain. The art teacher's preaching the virtues of pastel shades. You pay no attention, but it won't hurt your grades. You're painting bad numbers, connecting the dots. They don't have to tell you, you don't call the shots. You jump when they say jump. You don't ask how high. Cause painting by numbers, they know you'll get by. Painting by numbers, they know you'll get by. Position in the old man's firm. He signs all the papers, you agree to the terms. And they let you run errands, you don't get days off. You take out the garbage and hope it pays off. You're painting by numbers, connecting the dots. You work from the neck down, you don't call the shots. You jump when they say jump, you don't ask how high. Cause painting by numbers, you know you'll get by. Painting by numbers, you know you'll get by.
James McMurtry performing Painting by Numbers on the Mountain Stage. To hear the full performance and more, tune in Saturdays at 6 and Sundays at noon right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. Our Appalachia Health News Project is made possible with support from Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Randy Yowie. Eric Douglas is our news director, and he produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.